I listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
If former mistresses recalled at having to perform domestic chores and bargain with black women, both considered beneath their dignity, still more insult and injury appeared when black women became their customers. They bought dresses they were not allowed to wear as slaves, and former mistresses now sold to them, sometimes from dire necessity and sometimes to earn enough to buy themselves a new dress. Perhaps the most embarrassing of all predicaments was having to buy back a dress one had previously discarded as a gift to a slave. Lizzie Neblett faced that dilemma even before the war had ended. In 1864, she found herself compelled to buy back a dress she had given a slave years before. She paid $3.50. In her enthusiasm, writes Drew Faust, she seemed oblivious both to the irony and to the loss of status implicit in purchasing her own cast-off dress from a slave. Neither the irony nor the loss of status such exchanges marked was lost on Gertrude Thomas. She was insulted when her former slaves came to her with offers to buy her old dresses, and mortified to know that not only could they afford to buy them, but that they were familiar enough with her financial circumstances to know that she needed to sell them. Her embarrassed financial predicament was indeed public knowledge, but to have it paraded about by former slaves added to her humiliation. By this point, Thomas owned neither a proper carriage nor a proper horse to draw it. On trips to town, she tried to avoid being seen in the only carriage she now owned, an unfashionable thing, by getting out before it reached Augusta's main street, where people could see the face attached to the sheriff's sails. She walked the rest of the way. For 3 years, Thomas had been wearing sackcloth and ashes, while her former slaves had money to buy her old but best dresses. She could quip that it was a wasteful expenditure of their money, and she could refuse to sell to them. She had never learned to bargain and trade with our old servants, and had no interest in learning. Yet, she could not prevent them from obtaining better dresses from other white women of her class, who under the pressure of poverty were unwilling to hold tightly to appearance for namesake only. But Thomas was determined that even if other white women gave in, she would not, even though she was in desperate straits. Thomas tried to salvage some remnant of her former self and power by limiting her transactions with freed women in the matter of clothing to the form of gifts. She was open to granting favors, but requests for them had to be put in a language that clearly denoted that she was rendering a favor and not a service. When a former slave seeking a dress from her daughter's wedding approached Thomas about purchasing one of hers, she refused. She gave her one instead. Hey, welcome to the Blackout Tips podcast. Your host Rod and
Karen.
We're live on a Monday, ready to do some podcasting.
Yes, honey, that pride is something else, boy.
Ain't it?
She was like, I give this to you before I get some money, the money that I need.
So broke, I'm dressed in sackcloth and ashes, and I'm getting out of my broke ass carriage on my way into town and walking 3 miles into town so people won't see me in my broke ass carriage.
Come on, I'm going in my carriage jalopy.
Listen, this is why I love this book. I'm telling y'all, Out of the House of Bondage, The Transformation of the Plantation Household by Thivolia Glimpf. Such an amazing book because of shit like this, because like it just explains so many things that we have just like, we kind of know but we don't know. You know, things that you feel, but you don't have a historical relevance to back it up. And to see, like, cause a lot of this book is from white former mistresses and mistresses, slave owners essentially, and black freed women and former slaves, who in their own words, in their own journals, their own diaries and stuff. And so we know exactly what they were thinking, exactly what they were saying. And the pride and the foolishness of white supremacy, because you bought into your own white supremacy, you know that the optics of someone, a black person, buying a dress from you that you sorely need the money from is worse than giving them the dress at a loss. Like, you like, but at least now my socially I would rather take injury to myself, get no financial gain, but I'll get a mental gain of, I gave this to you and you still remain below me on the station of race. That's so fucking insane. Like, this, I was reading this, I forget how many pages this book is, but I was reading the fuck out of this book.
Almost like a charity.
Yeah, yeah. It's like she, like, because, and this, and the thing is that charity that a lot of people do, where it's charity not truly for altruism, but to establish their hierarchy over you. It was something it took me a while to realize that people were like that. But you know, I like, that's low key one of the reasons I back off of trying to like really work with activists too much, is because a lot of activism in the internet age, and maybe it's always been that way, but you know, you can really see it online, it's a lot of like, I'm putting myself on a pedestal above the people I'm giving to. So even if I'm saying like, I'm doing this for black women, yeah, 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 unless they disagree with me, unless I disapprove of something they do or say, then fuck those bitches. But you know, hey, this is my charity, da da da, you know, like, I'm putting a good face on it, but the truth of the matter is, it's really about me saying I'm still better than you, because I'm giving to you, I'm the one giving to you, I'm the one organizing people to give you money, you're the one who needs it, so let's keep that in mind. And so you have white women in this case that needed the money and went without gave up the material of the dress, like, because other white women weren't buying it, because when slavery ended, it bankrupted a lot of white households, because not all of them obviously, but some of them, you know, in that in between time, especially those 8 years of Reconstruction, where it's like you have to hire people to do the work,
right?
Well, we were used to not hiring people and keeping all the money. Now we have to hire people, pay them some of the money, and we can't get by on that budget. You know,
because we was never meant to get by on that budget, because the labor cost was supposed to be zero.
Exactly. One of the things, you know, and this is not a knock on folks, but you know, some will probably take it that way, but one of the things about like the socialism shit that's funny to me is black people basically got to start participating in capitalism just recently, to be honest. And now we got to go to socialism. Larry Wilmore was making this point on his podcast. It's just funny. It doesn't mean you got to be against or for. It's just funny how once niggas start getting some money, because I mean, even black people that promote like socialism and shit, a lot of their targets are other black people who deal in capitalism. So it's like, so it's like a big part of it is like, well, now that niggas is getting it, it's got to, the whole system need to be shoveled. It's over. But you know, and obviously it's anecdotal, but it's just funny. But the thing is though, capitalism enabled these black women and black laborers to get their freedom,
right?
In many cases, it's not, you know, like I said, it's not an argument for like capitalism is great. That's not what I'm saying. But like, for example, you don't want to sell me the dress because you see, I'm too good for you niggers and I'd rather be broke. Well, other white women was broke too.
Come on.
So they was like, yes, I need $3.50 for a dress. Absolutely, I'll sell you the dress. You know,
I have no pride in this matter.
Right. And I don't remember if it's in this chapter or later, but black women also would have like, I think in New Orleans, they even had like a parade where black women, and I think men too, but black women would dress in their like finest gowns and they would walk through the streets and just, you know, like parade. This is like this beautiful moment of just like, you know, every year, just like, oh, here we go, going to town, we're dressed as to the nines, and you know, because it's a freedom they never had. You couldn't dress right. Nice, you couldn't, unless it was in service to some white person who was telling you to dress nice, you couldn't really dress nice on your own. And so these white people were literally, one, running the house as if black people were gonna riot that day, and then they would look out their windows and shit and just be hating, like, how dare these bitches dress in these fine gowns, they think they white women, you know, that's what we need to do, that's what we dress in, these are our clothes, the clothes you had to sell them because you didn't have no money,
right?
The clothes that they bought with their hard-earned money from their labor, the labor that you don't do, the labor you never really had to do, the labor that some of y'all fail at doing. Once, you know, like, husbands were like, okay, wife, you ain't got no household slaves no more, so I'm expecting you, the person that's been calling these women lazy and talking about how hard it is to manage these
to
women,
cook, to and, clean, to press these clothes. Yes.
And then you find out just how inadequate you are and just how hard working those lazy niggers will happen to be the whole time, because it's different, it hit a little different when you the one got to starch that collar and you the one got to, you know, you're talking about men that, you know, many cases women didn't have rights already, white or black, you didn't have any rights. So you talking about men that could be abusive to these women the same way they were abusive to slaves, right? And shit. So now it's like, dinner ain't ready? Okay, well, listen, Auntie Charlotte used to have dinner ready every day, and ever since she left the house, your ass ain't got dinner ready because you don't know how to cook.
Right, you know? Right, and I bet you it probably didn't taste the same or any of that shit, because it's one of those things where anything that was worth value, niggas knew how to do. Mm-hmm. Like the shit that actually mattered, even, you know, the shit that people overlook, black and brown people know how to do this. But this particular, we're talking about slavery, they knew how to cook and clean and till the fields and crop and all that stuff. Like, they knew how to do this. You were so busy fucking punishing them that you never thought twice about actually managing and seeing what they was doing, because you thought what they did was worthless.
Mm-hmm. And you had to think that, because if you think that their value is, if you think that black people aren't worthless, then what does it say about your value? If you admit these black people are working harder than you, that they're human beings, they're not, you know, machines, like, they're not animals, they're not subhuman. If you admit that, then what does it say about you, the person that treats this person so terribly, exploits their labor, and does no real work of their own? You know, so that's what's so wild about it. But yeah, the dresses in particular just stuck out. That's those passages always speak out to me, because one, white women were just fucking incensed that black women would dress up, like that black women would be pretty, that their men would look at these black women, you know, because they've been told their whole lives, you're the apex of attraction, you set the mold for beauty standards, you define everything. Meanwhile, there's light-skinned babies running around all through slavery, but okay,
come on.
But that's what they were told, that's what they were taught, and this slap was just a slap in the face to everything that they were told to believe about themselves, that they were told to believe about black women. Not to mention the monetary embarrassment of it, of needing this money, needing to also feel superior. Like, I, because also black women were buying the dresses to, as a means of flexing, to be like, we equal, bitch. You know what I mean? No. You don't need to give me a dress for my wedding. I can buy it. Cause you don't own me anymore. Right. You don't tell me what to do anymore. Mm-mm. I don't owe you any favors.
You're not the boss.
Right. You know?
And that has bothered white people for fucking ever.
One of these days I'll read another excerpt about this white woman that, when they was trying to hire slaves, when they was, had to get to the point where free people were now able to be freelancers with their labor, right? So like, hey, the highest bidder is where I go work, and if they don't work out, I work for my fucking self. I can just go to my house, cook and clean for myself, work in the field with my family, and we'll make money that way, right? Mm-hmm. And so one time they hired a white woman to do it. She was like a Danish girl or something, you know, like an immigrant. And essentially they were like, you know, do the same labor, and the woman quit immediately. She's like, who the fuck can do all this work? It's like, right, black people have been doing all of that work because they had to as slaves, but also they were the only ones that could fill the needs as paid laborers, because what you expect for that amount of work, the average person don't know nothing about that kind of work. Person has never worked that hard in their life,
never.
So, oh man, so such a good book, man. I cannot recommend it enough, man. All right, let's and for those that are wondering, like, what's the book? Out of the House of Bondage. Thivolia is the person who wrote it, and Thivolia is Thyvolia. Like I said, great book, especially if you want to specifically know about black women and white women relationships during slavery. And it also goes into the hardships white women face too, as women that essentially didn't have much rights anyway. So, you know, where they could have been allies, they chose instead to be mistresses.
Butterfly in the sky, I could go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a rainbow. I can go anywhere. Friends to know and ways to grow, a reading rainbow. I can be anything. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. A reading rainbow.
All right, it's time to get into the segment that we need to do to be responsible to everybody. Okay, it just is what it is. Let's see, what song am I gonna, I guess this one. Coronavirus time, y'all. Going to the old coronavirus playlist, picking out another song. All the songs in the 80s took 5 minutes to start.
Young teacher, the subject of schoolgirl fantasy. She wants you so badly, knows what she wants to be. Inside her, there's longing, this girl's an open page. Bookmarking, she's so close now, this girl is half his age.
All right, let's get into some news. Somebody was violating this rule today at the, we went to the grocery store.
Yes.
I trusted Karen to go get some Brussels sprouts and a lemon, y'all. My mistake.
I should have just stayed with you.
It's on me. But I looked over, someone was intensely talking to Karen from only like a couple feet away.
I didn't ask her to come over there.
And I thought Karen must have knew her from the way that she was talking so intensely to Karen. And then I went and tried to give Karen an out by standing, you know, close to Karen so she could be like, oh, that's my husband, I gotta go. But Karen just ignored me and kept talking to the woman, y'all. Just getting coronavirus all over her clothes and everything, apparently. You know? I was like, I should have went by myself. I would put my headphones on. I would have walked past crazy people trying to talk to me that don't respect the 6 feet distance, and I would have been fine. But I tried to calm myself. Trying to get Karen out the house.
I'm in the house most of the time, but that's probably why.
Trying to get her some introvert experience, you know, how Karen is. She's some extrovert stuff. I can't do it, y'all. It's like, you know, all that stuff that was cute when we go out to dinner and talk, she just talked to people and be hugging waiters and shit. It's not cute no more. And so I don't want to die, and I don't want her to die. So I don't know what I'm gonna do, guys. And then later I was like, so who's that, like a former coworker or something? Oh, I don't know. I don't even know her.
Mm-mm.
Didn't even, you don't know her. So you let somebody you don't know stand 2 feet from you, almost touching your shoulder, talking to you for minutes on end. Just droplets coming all out. Just coronavirus droplets all in the air. We covered it on the show every day. Every day. And Karen just like, let me go out here and get sick and die.
I'm too nice. I didn't want to be rude.
Well, you know what's rude? Getting coronavirus all over somebody.
That's true.
That's what's rude to me, you know? What about me wanting you wanting to live? Did that not matter? I feel like it's more rude for crazy people going out killing people. And what was she talking about, Karen? Tell the audience. Come on.
Oh, what was she
Mm-hmm. your new best friend.
I didn't say she was my best friend. How did we get here?
Listen, y'all was tight when I walked over. Couldn't even get a word in edgewise. I had to finish my shopping without you. Go ahead. Tell her, what was she saying, Karen?
She was basically telling me about my heart and how my heart had gotten hard. And she was just going on and on and on. And I was just sitting there looking at her. And I was like, okay, all right. And it was one of them things. Like I said, I'm too nice. This is why I know when the zombie apocalypse happened, I'm gonna be the first person to die. I know. I know me. I'm gonna be the first person to die.
I don't disagree. I mean, this is the whole thing I was afraid of when I said we got to go to New York and I don't want to get robbed. Because I mean, clearly, this is saying 6 feet is, I mean, the minimum. Signs everywhere. Crazy people don't care about that stuff.
No, they don't.
So you have to be the one to care for them and be like, no, crazy person, I don't know you. You don't know me. I don't know what, you don't know nothing about my heart. So go on, crazy. You just have to do it. I understand, man. If we die in the next week or so, guys,
it's my fault. I'm so sorry. I'm the one that's gonna end the show. I'm so sorry, y'all. This is why I stay at home.
I care about y'all as an audience, which is why I'm taking care of myself, so y'all have something to get y'all through the however many months we're gonna be locked up like this. And you know, Karen just don't care. She's like, I'm out here hugging strangers and shit. So
I didn't hug her.
Now I have to Clorox bleach my Brussels sprouts, because people that talk like that be talking to everybody. You know she ain't talk to, you know, she didn't just pick you like you special. She stopped and talked to everybody probably. My goodness. In all fairness, she didn't look crazy at first, though. I give you that.
Mm-mm.
When she walked in, I thought she was a normal person getting off work, but then she started talking crazy and I said, oh man. And now what happened? Was it because you did that thing where you act like you know people when you don't know them? Is that what happened?
Yeah, because at first I thought I did recognize her, but I didn't later on realize I did not, because I started going through my mental Rolodex. That's my fault. This is why I'm just gonna stay at home where I belong.
Care always try to be friends. There's no friends in the coronavirus apocalypse, baby.
That's fine. I can fix that. Ain't nobody here but me and you.
I know. Just saying. Just trying to keep it. What if something happens? You have to leave the house and then it's gonna come back on you. I'm just trying to help you with these survival skills. What happened if I don't make it through the coronavirus apocalypse and you out here on your own just talking to strangers trying to be polite? And now you got it, you know?
I don't want that to happen.
I'm just trying to save you, baby. I don't want you to die. I need you.
I don't want to die either.
Okay. I'm like, it's crazy in these streets. Like, people hiring from jobs remotely now. They don't even have to go in for an interview. You don't have to meet the person. That's how serious it is. And they paying them in toilet paper. They're not even paying them in cash. Like, you just get...
You get 12
rolls of two ply every Friday.
You get them weird multiplication numbers. One roll equals 72 other rolls, some shit like that.
That's how people make money now, man. Like, the shit is changing so fast on these streets. No, this stimulus package ain't gonna make it. This $1,200 is not gonna make it for most people. That's not enough.
Nope.
They have to do something else. American stimulus package policies is like Smokey Mama and Friday, when she was sending him to the store. He was like, this ain't enough. He was like, make it enough. That's what our stimulus package was like. Make it enough.
And the thing is, people talking like that, but A, people really need it, and B, most people know that it depends on where you live, and even in small, it's just not enough. But you know, a lot of that is what a lot of minimum wage people have to live on every month, and people want to shit on those people and act like the jobs they do. Message back to what you were saying before. Even us, being black people, look at them people like what they do is worthless. What they do ain't that important. Their jobs, you know, they just doing their thing. But yeah, those people's jobs are very important, and you wouldn't change your job sitting at your desk to do that. I know I wouldn't.
Well, that's interesting though now, because everybody's like, remember a month ago and when things were normal and people was always saying stuff like, they don't understand how important I am at this job. Without me, this whole place would go under. Y'all need me, okay? Y'all need me up in here, and y'all don't pay me enough, and y'all don't treat me right. And now, today, people like, the fuck you mean I'm an essential employee? Y'all don't need me. Y'all need to stop tripping and send me home.
Stop playing.
Okay, I don't even be doing shit up in here. I be binging Ozark and shit. Let me go home. Okay?
I am a non-essential employee.
This is some bullshit. Anyone can click these keys. All right.
Come on, anybody.
I ain't.
I've always thought that. Well, not always, but the older I got, the more I realized that I was replaceable. That I'm like, okay. Nobody is that important.
Now everybody think they not important. Companies like, you still gotta work, you essential. They're like, I'm a very expendable employee, just send me home. Yeah, I wish, but you know, I keep seeing like all these stories of people like gathering, like, oh, we going up to a party, someone threw a party in like either Virginia or DC either Virginia, D.C., or New Jersey. I can't remember. It was like 60 people came to this party. And another, like a church held, you know, services anyway and stuff like that. I think we're going to need people to go ahead and declare. We're going to need the government to declare martial law.
Martial law?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you
mean
martial law?
Mm-mm. I mean martial law. I think, see, that's where you take anyone leaving a house and trying to gather. You seeing Marshawn Lynch over there in a hazmat suit and then he just shows up and run through a motherfucker face. I think that's what we need as a policy in America. We just start sending him different places and just let him run through a motherfucker face over and over and over and over.
They'll
until
disappoint.
Yeah, until they stay their ass in the house. You know, it's the only thing I can see working. No one's afraid of this shit. Like, you realize when we was kids, you remember when Michael Jordan played that game, we had the flu?
Mm-hmm.
And he was a hero for that.
He was.
You know, I remember watching that game. It was against the Utah Jazz, I believe. I think we may have watched that together at Joe's Crab Shack, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And I remember watching how he was just so fucked up.
Drained and tired.
The announcers and all the fans, they're like, what a hero, he's playing with the flu. And nobody to this day has brought up, what if he would have got somebody else sick with the flu?
Didn't care.
Nobody cared. Can you imagine if one of these niggas tried to play with the coronavirus? If LeBron James tried to have a coronavirus game. Mm-mm. With his lungs messed up and him coughing and shit. You know how he would never play in sports again. We would be like, that was the end of his career.
The game and be like, you got to go right now.
Yeah, like, motherfucker, what are you doing? You got coronavirus. You can't be out here. Someone else could catch that shit. But we watched a man play with the flu and we was like, wow, what a fucking hero. But you know what? I think it's okay because, you know, we all know Michael's really just gone off that handy. You know, if it was, you know, if it had been real, the real flu, I think maybe people would feel differently. But, you know, knowing that he had just probably, you know, never stopped, never settled on some handy that the night before at the club, you know, we can let it go through. So all right, the stories. Let's see, where should we start? There's so many of these fucking stories. How about this? Amazon, Instacart, grocery delivery workers strike for coronavirus protection and pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pay them.
Yeah, today, if you weren't supposed to use Instacart or Amazon today, if to support them in the strike. I don't know who did that and who didn't, but I saw it on Twitter. But yeah, some Amazon warehouse workers in Staten Island, New York, and Instacart's grocery delivery workers nationwide walked off of their jobs on Monday. They're demanding stepped up protection and pay as they continue to work while much of the country is asked to isolate as a safeguard against the coronavirus. The protests come as both Amazon and Instacart have said that they plan to hire tens of thousands of new workers. Online shopping and grocery home delivery are skyrocketing as much as the nation hunkers down and people stay at home, following orders and recommendations from federal and local governments. This put a spotlight on workers who shop, pack, deliver, and deliver these high demand supplies. Companies refer to the workers as heroes, but workers say their employers aren't doing enough to keep them safe. Yeah, man. The people, I'm telling you, man, the mask thing, obviously, you want your medical people to have it. Bar none. if you had an N95 mask, you want your medical people, the personnel, to have it first. After that though, I think people start getting a little confused on like who should want and have these masks. Now of course everyone's out for self, so you can get your hands on one, you just gonna get your hands on one, that's the end of it. People aren't, you know, but like some of the people that need this type of protection is actually people that work at the grocery store, people that work at a pharmacy, people that work at the doctor's office, that might not be an emergency room doctor or a hospital, but just the doctor's office. They see people who are sick.
Yeah,
you know,
post office
workers. Like there's people, you know, at Instacart, Amazon, there's people out here who, you know, literally our lives are in their hands, and we're just mm-hmm. hoping that they don't get sick, or hoping that they're not a you know, a asymptomatic carrier of this shit. And hope isn't really enough if we're not protecting them, if we're not doing enough to make sure that they're safe. I mean, I like going to our Publix, the one we go to, because they're constantly cleaning. Like,
yeah, they was cleaning the buggies.
Not just that, the bathroom. I just noticed all the stuff they were doing. Like, they have employees now that just all they do is clean.
That's it. That's all their job. And when we was leaving, one of the managers walked up and he was spraying down. She said, no, you don't pre-clean. You spray it and clean it before you give it to them.
Yeah. So, you know, like we're talking about, we need to be looking at people who are high vectors of contact with people. You know, that's one of the reasons I'm not, like, when people make the argument like celebrities and sports figures and shit shouldn't get the test, I'm like, that's thinking backwards. Some of these people are high vectors for contact with a lot of people. If LeBron James has it, you probably want people to know that have come in contact with the Lakers team, all that mm-hmm. stuff, the personnel that work at the arena. A person right. like that can infect a lot of people. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just a matter of like, we're doing it because he earns a lot. We're doing it because he has a lot of money. No, I'm not saying like, you know, if it was, I don't know, if Mark Zuckerberg is in his mansion isolated from everybody and there's 0% chance I don't care if he gets tested or has a ventilator or whatever. But if it's like, you know, shit, we saw it with Rudy Gobert. I mean, Rudy Gobert got it and then touched the mics, and now you got reporters need to be tested, you got teammates that need to be tested. So like, that shit is important. So I think people have it backwards, but you know, other people that need to be tested are a lot of people that don't earn a lot of money and that we don't really treat like heroes, right. even if you call them that. So workers from both Amazon and Instacart want more access to paid sick time. At this time, it's available only to those who have tested positive for coronavirus or get placed on mandatory self-quarantine. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, even at my job, they actually, which I appreciate they did this, and it's probably because they got so much pressure, they actually sent out an email and said, hey, we have a coronavirus policy, which we didn't have before, and part of the policy is you get 2 weeks and we'll pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they was like, we don't want them problems.
But do you have to have a positive coronavirus test though, is the question.
I think either you have to be positive, you have to have been in contact with somebody that's positive. I think those two.
Because see, the thing is, it's hard to get a test for a lot of people, and then also the advice they're giving people is if you start experiencing symptoms, treat yourself as if you have it.
Yeah, and that so was that too. They was like, if you start feeling sick or you feel like, we'll pay for that too.
Okay, yeah. So that's the part that people are skipping over when they're like that's why this Amazon policy isn't necessarily good or bad. I'm really a good policy. Now, some of it is just that we don't have the test amounts that we really need to truly be on top of this, and we definitely can't test. We aren't testing a lot of people who are asymptomatic. You know, that's just how it is. So if we had the numbers and the preparation, maybe we'd be able to, but since we don't, it's really fucked up. Amazon workers want their warehouse to be closed for a longer cleaning with guaranteed pay. Instacart's grocery delivery gig workers are asking for disinfectant wipes and hand sanitizer and better pay to offset the risk they're taking. Totally understand all of that, man. Like, I see the Instacart people in the store sometimes, you know, you can see they're like the professional shoppers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, man, that's a dangerous job. Compared, you know, people are paying you to do that because they don't want to do it themselves.
Right.
Let's see. Florida pastor has been arrested and charged after holding a packed Sunday service, ignoring social distancing rules.
Good.
Yeah, that same pastor, Pastor Rodney Howard Brown of the River Church, I think we talked about him yesterday. They went ahead and arrested him.
Because they're like, we got to set an example. Don't do this. We are not telling you to stay at home for your health. It is serious.
Right.
Because odds are, guarantee you, within the next few days, they're going to have a big outbreak at that church.
Yep. And of course, he's openly defying what was told in his sermon. He said, "We are not stopping anything. I've got news for you. This church will never close. The only time the church will close is when the rapture is taking place." Sunday, he boasted about how clean the church was and revealed this bizarre method of killing the virus. "We brought in 13 machines that basically kill every virus in the place. And if somebody walks through the door, it's like it kills everything on them. If they sneeze, it shoots down at like 100 miles per hour. It'll neutralize it in split seconds. We have the most sterile building in, I don't know, all of America. I know they're trying to beat me up for having the church operational, but we are not a non-essential service," Howard Brown said. "And just so you know, we are totally covered by the law." And people say, "What law are you covered by?" And I say, "The First Amendment to the Constitution."
You don't know the Constitution, baby.
Crazy part to me is that motherfuckers are still in the building with them. Couldn't be me. Mm-mm. As we say in the South, bless your heart.
Bless your heart. Me and Jesus would have been at the house.
Mm-hmm. Twitter had to pull down Laura Ingraham's coronavirus tweet for violating the policy. Because they're trying to deal with all the misinformation. And so they had to broaden the definition of harm. When they say basically you can't be tweeting things because it does harm to the community. And so they had to say, look, harm is also lying about this fucking virus and getting people, you know, sick or potentially in situations where they'll get sick.
Right.
So, in recent days, she has used her show to advocate for the use of hydroxychloroquine as a potential treatment for coronavirus, citing anecdotal evidence of success. In the tweet at issue, she wrote, "The Lenox Hill Hospital in New York, among many hospitals already using hydroxychloroquine with very promising results. One patient was described as Lazarus, who was seriously ill from COVID-19, already released." Her tweet seemed to stem from comments made by Dr. William Grace, an oncologist who is affiliated with Lenox Hill, but does not work for the hospital. An article on the network's website now includes the following editor's note. A previous version of this article incorrectly stated that Dr. William Grace's relationship to Lenox Hill Hospital in New York City. Dr. Grace is not employed by the hospital, and his opinions given below are his own. Fox News did not respond to a request for comment.
Of course not.
She's continued advocating for the use of hydroxychloroquine, with the Food and Drug Administration issued as emergency use authorization for on Sunday. The anti-malarial drug is also being tested in New York State. On Monday morning, she criticized a CNN article for including a disclaimer that there's little scientific evidence that chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine are effective in treating the virus.
But that's the fact, because they haven't got a vaccine. Like, they're testing to see if it works. They might have got some positive results, but it don't mean that it's the end all be all.
Here's the thing. Scientifically, there's a process for everything.
Right.
Science can't just be anecdotally hopeful. You need studies, you need stats, you need methodology. You need to study this thing, because what if you give somebody this shit and some other issue pops up? You do know that too much of it can be toxic. We do know that there's different kinds of it. Other people use this drug currently to deal with ongoing issues like lupus and stuff. So you can't just throw stuff out there. But that is what happens when you have a news organization that does not require facts and still gets treated like a news organization.
Right.
She hosts an opinion show, but people treat it like news, and she acts like it's news. So unfortunately, you know, and ironically, I guess, Twitter is showing they can actually do this stuff in real time. Stuff that they've claimed, you know, is too difficult of a job in the past, and they've left people's tweets up and stuff that was wrong and harmful. Now, at the brink of the fucking end of society, here they come, like, okay, we can take these tweets down now. Okay.
Which means you could have done it all along.
Speaking of which, Fox News is worried about legal action after misleading viewers about coronavirus.
Good, good. I hope they get a class action lawsuit.
Yeah. It's so sad because
they were part of the problem.
It's just so sad because they have this platform in America and they are the biggest news quote unquote channel. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's what's so sad about it, is like literally you guys are harming people. Anyway, I hope they do get sued. You know, I hope people win, because they should be a, like, this is the thing we're gonna sue for. But look, hey, they should have been sued y'all for many, many, many lies. You know, should have been able to get sued for, you know, birtherism and other things they promoted on their channel. But you know,
yeah, because the thing is, some of these people that are dying, people's moms and grandpas and, you know, they relatives, their children might be like, fuck y'all, yes, I'm suing.
Mm-hmm.
Cause just because my daddy was in that shit don't mean I was.
Right. Somebody's parents died off this bullshit. And now they, you know.
Yeah, that was. And like, then that's the other thing. Them over this. No.
That's the other thing. People are actually dying because of the lies that they're peddling. You know, those people that died in Arizona trying that chloroquine shit. People died in Africa. 3 people tried it. Like, by the way, millions will not be receiving a stimulus check. Those who support the decision believe it's not the U.S. government's place to bankroll someone who broke the law, because they will not be paying for, let me see, I think it's, yeah, undocumented immigrants are not eligible for most federal benefits. Many immigrant rights advocates view the decision as dangerous, as it will continue to put the country's health at risk. It is not just a matter of dollars and cents. It isn't something that only affects undocumented workers and their families, advocates argue. Anu Joshi, interim vice president of policy at the New York Immigration Coalition, said she and her team are incredibly disappointed and frustrated. These are the people cooking, delivering our food while we're all inside socially isolating. The folks doing the deep clean of houses and offices, who are taking care of your very elderly and very young. They were cut out of the cash assistance and they were cut out of any kind of unemployment insurance. Yeah, if you have a job and you are getting a fucking check, and your check is dried up because of this shit, you should get a fucking check. Yes. That's it. It's really not the time to quibble over this bullshit. But that's the thing about Republicans, man. They never fucking stop. You know what I mean? Like, even, like, and I know people partied on it and laughed and shit, but, low-key, even the people behind on child support, it might fuck up something for them. True. You know what I mean? Like, I hate to say it that way, because, you know, obviously you pay your child support if you can, blah blah blah, and maybe there's just some deadbeat ass niggas that just ain't doing what they supposed to do. But,
yeah, but some of them actually really
it
struggling.
Really might fucking make a difference. You know, it could be the difference between somebody that would be self-isolating now being put in a position where they are out there working sick and infecting people and shit. So, you know, it's just crazy. And $1,200 ain't enough anyway. All right, let's see what else. Coronavirus. India's Prime Minister Modi seeks forgiveness over lockdown. India's Prime Minister has asked for this country's forgiveness for imposing a sweeping lockdown, he said, that will hurt millions of people. Criticism is mounted over the lack of planning ahead of the coronavirus shutdown, which was enforced with less than 4 hours notice. 4 hours. Many of India's 1.3 billion citizens have been left jobless and hungry. Tens of thousands of migrant laborers have been forced to walk hundreds of kilometers to their native villages. In his weekly radio address, Prime Minister...
So he gave them no time to
prepare. 4 hours?
Woo!
That's like Avengers Infinity War. Like, you got till Avengers Infinity War is off and you need to have figured out what you're going to do. He apologized for the impact of the strict stay-home measures, but he said that there's no other way to stop the rapid spreading virus.
You could have told them, hey, we're going to give you until this day. I mean, something. I mean, people could have planned, prepared, anything. You know what happened? You start working halfway through your shift, which is 4 hours. They was like, hey, by the time your shift ends, you got to be up out of here.
Yep. So he had to basically ask for their forgiveness, but y'all gotta do this. People are banned from leaving their home for 3 weeks under total lockdown measures announced on Tuesday. All non-essential businesses have been closed. Almost all public gatherings are banned. It has sparked the exodus from major cities such as Delhi, where thousands of migrant workers are setting out on long journeys back to their home villages after transport was stopped. One worker died on Saturday after he attempted to walk a 168-mile journey back home. A police official said to Reuters News that, oh, wow, that's crazy.
That's far. So that's what I'm saying. Like, you did this and you didn't prepare, which means you should have allowed people time to for transportation to get them home. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Versus mm-hmm. now I got to walk 200 miles. My nigga, a mile is far.
Dozens of Liberty University students sick with coronavirus symptoms after Falwell reopened campus.
Of course, we said this.
Liberty University, which partly reopened its campus amid coronavirus pandemic, confirmed that they now have almost a dozen students sick with potential COVID-19 symptoms. The physician who runs the Evangelical School's Student Health Service, Dr. Thomas Epps Jr., told the New York Times that 3 students were referred to local hospitals while 8 more were instructed to self-isolate. Liberty will be notifying the community as deemed appropriate and required by the law. University President Jerry Falwell Jr. told the newspaper, adding that any student returning to campus would have to self-quarantine for 2 weeks.
Yeah, and they ought to charge him because they told him, hey, don't do this. I think, I don't know how much more the article you're going to read, but I think that they were saying that initially he had told them that he was going to comply, and then he turned around and was like, nah.
Yeah, and if we're going to be fair to Jerry Falwell Jr., if we're going to be fair to Liberty University, I will say this, and I saw this complaint brought up about a lot of colleges. Instead, like, go home, you can't stay here attitude about it. For some people, they were like, well, there needs to be an option for kids that can't go home, you know, because, you know, just like during spring break, there's some kids that stay on campus because it's like, I can't, maybe I'm not from here. Maybe I don't have a place to go. I've already paid room and board. I'm staying in my room, and you know, and so the argument was he was gonna open up the campus dorms, allow people to do remote learning, and basically so classrooms wouldn't be open for people to, like, you know, sit in the actual classroom, but you would be able to sit in your room and use the Wi-Fi, use the eat meals at the cafeteria that they said they would, you know, cater to, you know, make it like clean and you maybe take it to go or something like that. So he was kind of trying to comply, but also trying to this is the best possible telling of it. He was trying to give those kids an option on having a place to stay in case they really would have just been out on their ass if the university the dorms hadn't been open. So that's what I read. When I read about the details of it, that I was like, I can understand that. But at the same time, this virus don't care. And you could be, you know, they could have gotten it from going somewhere else and coming back. They could have brought it to campus with them. They could be getting community spread on campus.
Yeah, you know, because dorms, close quarters, you know,
and because of the university, it is like, this is a religious university, and you know, these are young people. They may be acting in some ways that aren't prudent because they just don't feel so you know, like it's so real, you know. When we're young, we all do stupid shit like that.
Yeah, we do.
So I mean, like I said, I kind of feel bad in this situation, but it's just a tough call. But I think you just have to close the university and be like, I'm sorry, you know.
Yeah, and to an extent for that, I understand. I'm not heartless. But my thing is, there was nobody there, which means you had zero cases at that time, like on campus. It could have stayed at zero. And that's why when people left for spring break, I was like, no, y'all not coming back, because mm-hmm. we don't want to bring you. We don't know what you've done on your spring break. They act like colleges ain't seeing people partying in Florida and all that shit, and they don't know if their student populace is in that or not.
Yeah, 800 of the 1900 students that initially returned to campus last week have left, but Falwell says students off campus should be concerned due to the crowded conditions they're living in. If I were them, I'd be more nervous, he said. So yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, it's not a completely fucked up decision. It's just the wrong, I think it's just the wrong decision, and this is the cost of it. But those kids, I mean, shit, those kids could have got sick anywhere, but, you know, why bring them to a very crowded fucking, university and put them in situations where, you know, they're gonna be in proximity to each other all the time. Los Angeles to shut off water, power, and non-essential businesses that refuse to close. Shut off the water and power for non-essential businesses that refuse to close.
Right. They was like, you are not essential. Sorry you didn't make the list. No. Oh, you want to open up anyway? Okay, do it without water and power. Let's see how many customers you're going to get.
Hospitals consider universal do not resuscitate orders for coronavirus patients.
This is what happens.
Yeah, we have a lot of, like, the thing for the hospitals, if you guys been following Italy and shit, is not necessarily that all these cases are quote-unquote a death sentence. There's a lot of people that are treatable. But if you don't have the resources and the emergency room is overwhelmed, they had to start making some calls as soon as you pull up. And a lot of those calls are, who gets the respirator? Who doesn't? Who do we help? Who do we not? Who do we value their life and who do we not? And those are ugly calls you have to make in the snap decision. And
right. And this has a lot to do with why they was like, well, let's prepare so we don't have to make this decision. But because incompetent people run the shit, this is the end result.
Yeah, the less of those decisions you make, the better off you are, right? But that you have to make. Right. But yeah, we're gonna get to that point in America at some point. And so now hospitals have to, you know, because you're also having a lot of work. The medical professional staff does not necessarily have the right equipment to protect themselves. So now being in a room with someone who has this and dies, and you really can't, you know, pull them through, or, you know, maybe the cost of pulling them through is more equipment is wasted or more people get exposed to it and it won't ever stop the spread. So yeah, you're gonna have people having to be like, so the new thing is to save us time and effort and to save even more lives, we have to let people who die, we're just not even gonna try to save them, you know. Dire times. D Nice and Michelle Obama teaming up for the next club quarantine party. This already passed, but yeah, they register people to vote.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I thought, you know, voter registration. Michelle's so forward thinking, you know, she always trying to think about the rest of us.
She's the only people in there. What's like, hey, we could do something about this.
Mm-hmm. Couch party, a voter registration live set. So that was what Club Quarantine was, which was March 25th, I think, was when they did that one. A lot of people been going on Instagram Live. They've been doing like beat battles and song battles and shit. Mm-hmm. Producers are being like, I made this song, you made that song. People trying to, you know, pressure them into doing other stuff. I think people want to get Pharrell and Timbaland to go back and forth. Like, you know, there's some bright spots to this in the way people are adapting to it and still finding their joy and fun.
True.
Let's see. If you can't go to confession, take your sorrow directly to God, Pope says. So finally, the Pope is like, listen.
You can go directly. I'm not the only one with the telephone line.
Apparently, the Protestants had this shit right the whole time. Dial directly to God, okay?
Directly.
Do not go through the operator.
Mm-mm. Because you might give him coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. This is the right time, the opportune moment, an act of contrition done well, and our souls will become white like the snow, the Pope said March 20th during his live stream morning mass. Because you know he nervous. He don't like people touching him before the coronavirus.
Mm-mm.
And now it's out there. Mm-mm.
Ride around with that glass truck.
Yeah, I'm not even just talking about the glass thing. I'm talking about that video where people was like trying to touch his hand and hug him and shit, and he was slapping their hands off like, get the fuck off of me. And this is before coronavirus is out there. So you know, like, this germs. Pope, yeah, this Pope don't play that. You like, y'all pray to Jesus.
Well, ask yourself. I'm moving out the way.
Ask God, don't ask me. You know, Jesus on the main line. Tell him what you want, okay? Because I'm gonna be back in my isolation bubble. So all right, that's should I do more? That's enough coronavirus shit for today. I feel like there's gonna be a lot of these, so
it ain't going nowhere no time soon.
We'll be talking about this stuff every day. Oh wait, one more. Purell manufacturer has been sued for misleading germ killing claims. Yeah, a lot of people keep saying, like, hand sanitizer, hand sanitizer, hand sanitizer, and I'm not saying it's not that it's not an option, but washing your hands with soap is the best option.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people use that when they can't wash their hands immediately.
Yeah,
but they would probably prefer soap and water.
But yeah, according to legal docs, Purell's front label claims that it kills 99.99% of illness causing germs, and implies that figure is backed by scientific support, but the folks suing say none exist. Likewise, the suit adds that Purell hand sanitizer claims to help prevent infection and diseases, but there's allegedly no sound scientific evidence to support the claims. The lawsuit also mentions a letter sent by the FDA to Gojo in January, which plaintiffs claim describes Purell as nothing more than a topical antiseptic, which was not safe and effective in preventing infection. Wow. The class act, man, that's crazy, because you know how many people have been putting sanitizer on their hands, like, I'm safe, y'all.
Right.
The class action suit is seeking unspecified damages for any customer who bought the hand sanitizer, relied on its packaging and marketing materials.
Yeah, because that's why a lot of people bought it outside of soap, because they, you know, for some people, they was like, well, that's what your label says. So, yeah, if it's not true, I could see that being false advertisement.
Yeah, and I mean, this is one of those suits where I like, it's kind of important.
Yes, it is.
Because if that's true, then people need to know that, hey, this shit isn't actually gonna save you the way that you think. You know, like, this is not actually the solution you think. You still need to wash your hands, don't touch your face and all that shit. Like, that's the thing, when we leave the house, I don't give a fuck if they, it's not that I don't mind, but I don't give a fuck when they clean those buggies with that sanitizer shit. I still wash my hands on the way out, and I still don't touch my face, because I'm like, I'm treating this shit like it's everywhere, dog. Like, if I'm not in the comfort of my home with some clean washed hands, then they dirty to me. So you gotta be vigilant. Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, people think they clean now.
They do.
All right, let's see how much time we've been talking. Okay, let's get into some other news, guys. I'm in the wrong section. We haven't done fucking with black people this week yet, so let's go ahead and get into that.
We're just fucking with black people.
That's right, guys, time to play the game we all hate to play. It's Fucking with Black People, the game that goes all around the globe. We find every article and make us feel fuck with, and we assign point scores from 0 to 100, intervals of 25. Today's contestants, everybody. All right, man, that rockfish thing I made for lunch today was so good.
That was very delicious.
It was so good. I inhaled mine. I was like, damn, it's gone already?
Got some small tomatoes and it was really good.
Mm-hmm. Hello Fresh. What are you doing? Barack Obama's 2008 election boosted black men's mental health, study finds. When thinking about politics and news, we don't need to do all the editorializing. Let's get to the facts. Sociologist Tony Brown was curious about how positive events might impact public health. So the Rice University professor and his team of co-researchers chose one of the brightest moments in recent U.S. history, the 2008 election of Barack Obama, and measured its impact on the mental health of black adults. We wanted to know if there was any health implications from this momentous occasion in U.S. history. The study, Yes We Can, the Mental Health Significance for the U.S. Black Adults of Barack Obama's 2008 Presidential Election, will be published in the next volume of the Journal of Sociology on Race and Ethnicity. using data from, okay, uploading. come on, man, what's going on, Root? Let's see. Man, I gotta scroll all the way down. Hold on a second. Okay. Using data from the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, a nationally representative survey of 400,000 U.S. adults evaluating different health aspects, researchers honed in on mental health of black adults 30 days prior to Obama's election and 30 days after. So that's a lot of 400,000 is a lot of people in a survey. So, you know, those that could be a result that matters.
Yeah, they ain't getting 10 people.
One survey question asked respondents to count the number of days they would consider their mental health to be not good over the last month. Before Obama's election, black men on average counted 4 days when they experienced depression, stress, or problems with emotions. After he officially became the 44th president, the average number went down to 3 days. This may not seem like a big change, so Brown, for context, referenced another study that analyzed mental harm caused to black adults by nearby police shootings. In the study, participants reported a 0.14 day increase in mental health issues. The study's findings are important because we do not fully understand what factors protect mental health, Browns added. Specifically, the findings demonstrate that socio-political shifts mattered for the health of black men and that everyday conditions of life act as social determinants of health. Interestingly, black women did not experience the same mental health boost that black men did. In fact, they registered more poor mental health days. Before Obama's election, black women reported 4.6 days out of 30 they were experiencing mental health issues. After his election, the average went up to 5 days. I wonder why.
Said it went up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because truth be told, I think for a lot of black women, they were worried. You know, they was like, okay. And then he got it. They was like, God, I hope they don't kill him. I hope he don't get shot. You know how black women go into that protection mode.
It's interesting though, because I feel like as a black man, I felt some of that myself. And you would think that all black people feel that level of concern about Barack Obama's, you know, possible shit. I know it was a running joke. I mean, in the black community, like, this nigga might get shot. I hope he don't get shot. These white people ain't gonna let him do this. I think it might have went up because niggas was feeling themselves, and so who got to deal with it? Black women.
Yeah, they do.
Okay, we walking around like president, and they like, here this nigga go, you know what I mean? And so it made that shit go up. I mean, maybe that explains it. The reasons why are unclear, but Brown says a few explanations are likely, including the possibility that the election of the country's first black president spiked concerns among black women about his backlash, death threats, or the safety of the first family, in the same way they would worry about their own husbands, fathers, or sons.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. That's the only thing that would make sense. And like you say, it was more, it was about him, but it was more about that entire family, because, you know, for a lot of black women, they were excited to see Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I know that women had the excitement for Barack. Well, a lot of women, not just funny, they was more happy for her. And then they started thinking about their kids and them and the harassment and white supremacy. So yes, I could see it going up.
Yeah, that's exactly what you said. Brown and the study's co-authors told Rice they plan on applying the style of research to other elections, including Donald Trump. So, and what the effect was on white women, including the 53%. You know, the question it made me consider is, what effect did the tearing down of Barack Obama for the next, what has now been about 10-12 years here, I wonder what effect that's had on black men and black people in general. Because ever since he got elected, it's kind of been quote unquote downhill for a lot of people, where they've just tried to do everything to tear his legacy down, whether it be because of their racism and we don't want a nigger president and all that, the harsh rejection of him and his family and all that stuff. What has that effect been on all of us, you know, who witnessed them, you know, demagoguing Michelle Obama, you know, talking, you know, bad about Barack Obama wearing a tan suit and that double standard? Because if the positivity of the election had a positive mental effect, I mean, you have to wonder what is the the attempted destruction of that legacy and of this man and his family, what is that meant to black people and black men specifically? And that's just the racist people. I'm not even counting the people that claim to be like super liberal and woke, who also spend all day telling you how he wasn't shit and, you know, only Bernie Sanders can save us, or he was a coon, he wasn't the right type of black and all that stuff. I just wonder if so many people were boosted by this moment, what does that mean for now, seeing this man is essentially deconstructed for the last 12 years?
Well, I'm not a survey person, but I can tell you those numbers went up. Those numbers went away. Those numbers, because you have to think, right after, well, not too long after he got elected, it was like, yay! And then it was like, now we worry. And then people, you know, you have to go back in history. During that time, Black Lives Matters. During that time, Trayvon Martin. During that time, you had all these people dying and dying and dying and dying in the street and getting shot by police. So all the anxiety built and built and built and built and built. You know, and so if you have to look over the totality of that question, because that's a very long time and a lot has happened and a lot has changed during that time, and you have to think, then you have a racist that gets in office, and then you have him doing bullshit too. So I could see those 30 days possibly going to 7, 8, 9 or maybe 10 days or more for some people, because it's like now it's almost the opposite. It's like a constant stress that you're never relieved from, and now I'm dealing with this constant stress. Now I'm fucking locked in the house with this constant stress.
Yeah, it's interesting, man, because I've that's gotta have cost us something.
Yes,
it's gotta have cost us something. If this, if that gained us something, watching people basically say that wasn't shit, he ain't shit, his family ain't shit, and then, you know, electing Donald Trump, that says a lot. Also, I appreciate a study that actually looks at black people's mental health, because we have so many fucking studies about, you know, white people and their reaction to things, and then excusing all their feelings for, instead of being like, oh, these motherfuckers racist, we have to hear about economic anxiety and shit. So I actually appreciate the study that looked at us.
Yeah, and also I think for me, you know, when you look at that study, like I said, you have all these factors and things like that. Like I said, I don't know how far they're gonna go into the studies, but I could see the days going up, you know, and people being more paranoid. And you have to think, social media has evolved over this time. People have more contact with people. And I wonder what the study would say about black people that also turned on Barack Obama. Because, you know, there are a lot of black people that actually turned on him too. Mm-hmm. You know, and how do other black people feel about that?
That's what I'm saying. It's gotta be, we'll see that study, I guess, 12 years from now. 0 to 100.
50.
Okay. I'm gonna follow you on this and say 50. Miguel A. Nunez Jr. arrested for shoplifting groceries. You may be wondering, who is Miguel A. Nunez Jr.?
Yes.
Have you ever seen, the seminal film Juana Man?
Yes.
Filmed here in Charlotte, North Carolina, guys.
Mm-hmm.
He was Juana Man.
Oh, okay.
You also may know him from Sparks. He was also the gay dude in Life with Eddie Murphy and
Martin
Lawrence. Okay. He attempted to walk out of Ralph's supermarket in L.A. with $200 worth of groceries, according to TMZ. The Juana Man star was checking out at the supermarket when his credit card got declined. So he walked away and out the door and with the groceries still in his cart. Juana Man checks drying up, I guess. I don't know. Sources told the publication that Miguel returned to the same Ralph days later, but wasn't allowed inside. And police were called. Miguel was placed under citizen's arrest until the LAPD arrived. The actor was cited for misdemeanor shoplifting and was sent on his way. Due to the current COVID-19 pandemic, police aren't booking or jailing people for minor offenses. However, it's still deemed an arrest, although he was never taken to station. Miguel, on the other hand, is telling a completely different story. He told the publication he was in a long line to check out and got tired of waiting, so he just walked out with his groceries with the intent of returning another day to pay for them. He claimed he attempted to pay for his $200 worth of merchandise when he returned, but said the store manager refused to accept it and told him that he wasn't special. 0 to 100, Karen.
75, because I don't believe him.
You don't believe him?
No, the story don't make sense.
So, but you still 75 fucked with. I'm just trying to understand.
Because I was debating between 75 and 100.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess 75 for the simple fact that a black man walked out of the store with some groceries and he didn't get stopped.
Okay. I'm not 100% sure I understand the logic on this, to be frank with you.
Not that that's right.
No. It's your opinion. There's no right or wrong on this game. For mine, I think I'm gonna be more controversial than you. I'm giving it a zero. Not fucked with it all by this. My nigga, you can't just be like, I don't feel like waiting in line. I'ma just take $200 worth of shit home. I'll holler at y'all.
Holler at y'all later.
And I came back with $200 and they wouldn't take it shit don't sound like something don't, like, how you know it was worth $200 if you never checked out, you know? Or no, well, he said he had got his card that declined. So like, why did it take you days to come back with the $200? You know, like, something don't seem right. Why your card getting declined in the first place and you just leaving? You said you got tired of waiting, but in order to get your car declined, you're not waiting at that point.
You actually
trying to pay. So like, something don't sound like, if he would, like, I don't know, dog.
Sound like a hustle.
Something don't sound right, and I don't feel fucked with it. Until I see some actual like evidence of racism, this just sounds like, you know, some broke nigga tactics. You know what I'm saying? Now, I'm not begrudging him his broke nigga tactics,
mm-mm,
but you always know the number one rule of broke nigga shit. You never return to the scene of the crime.
Nope, you shouldn't have returned.
Okay, if you shoplift out of a place, that's it. That place is burned for the foreseeable future. You know? Like, I don't know about this one, man. And like, what were you returning for? Like, so you came in there the next time, you like, I'm not actually gonna shop, I'm not buying nothing, I just came with $200 to give y'all, and they was like, you under arrest, citizen's arrest. I mean, if you was, you know, I don't know, it just don't, something about it don't sound right.
Mm-mm.
Good luck to him though. I hope he's telling the truth, and that it just is a very far-fetched truth in my mind, because at the end of the day, I low-key am with the workers, because bruh, you not special. And I'm not saying that on some, you or nobody. No, right. Just everyone else had to wait in line. And when you can't pay for groceries, you know, there's a process to this shit. And the process isn't, I'm taking the groceries and doing whatever the fuck I want to, and I'll see you when I feel like it. That's not what the fucking process is. Come on, man.
No, the zombie apocalypse hasn't started yet.
So, just, I don't know about that one, man. Let's see. Ava DuVernay and Netflix win They See Us defamation lawsuit. Judge dismissed the battle over interrogation scene. So yeah, they were being sued, by who was that? That prosecutor, I believe, the former prosecutor, for being like, y'all made us look like we framed them kids or whatever. And Ava DuVernay was like, nigga, y'all made it look like y'all framed them kids with your actions in real life. because the First Amendment protects non-factual assertions, and because neither defendants, Ava DuVernay nor Array Alliance Incorporated, has sufficient minimum contacts with the state of Illinois to justify hauling them in the court here, Reed's complaint is dismissed. Reportedly wrote U.S. District Court Judge Manish Shah on Monday. So good. Glad it got dismissed. Zero fucked with.
Oh, zero.
Mad.
Zero. Y'all mad because they make you look like you really look? What the hell is this?
How dare you make it look like I did those things that I did to those kids?
But this is terrible. Did. We got facts. We can read the shit.
Last one. Two kids touched his fence. He hurled racial slurs, chased them down with a gun, cops say. On the final day of school, before classes shut down because of the coronavirus pandemic, two African-American children were walking to campus when they walked past a North Miami-Dade house and touched a white iron fence. The Hispanic homeowner, police say, rushed out and barked at them not to touch his property. He also called them dirty and used the N-word. And that wasn't all. According to Miami-Dade police, the 31-year-old Gabriel Gomez got in his truck and drove after the terrified children, ages 9 and 11. He pointed an orange and black handgun at them through the window. If I ever see you on this block or by my house again, I'll kill you and nobody's going to be able to find you, Gomez said, because you touched his fence. Miami-Dade police later raided his house, found an arsenal of weapons, including a custom-made 50 caliber rifle with an orange tip. An arsenal of weapons, you don't say? Gomez has now been charged with aggravated assault with a firearm on the March 13th incident. He's been ordered to house arrest, but must first post a $100,000 bond. Court records show his attorneys had a court hearing Friday to discuss the modifying his bond. Courts have largely been shut down because of the pandemic. Isn't that ironic? That has ground floor South Florida to a halt and killed thousands around the world. Gomez would face a hate crime enhancement to his charge, which would make a possible life sentence stiffer. Last year, a Miami man named Mark Bartlett was charged with aggravated assault with prejudice after he pointed a gun at a group of black teenagers before hurling racial slurs at them. Bartlett has pleaded not guilty and he's awaiting trial. Dracarys, you
same?
Yeah, that's a Dracarys for me. Touching your fence, what? And it's not enough that you called them late, like dirty niggers and all this shit. You didn't chase after them, and it does not escape me that you're not even a white man. Like, damn, boy, we can't catch a break.
Other brown people be like, you're a nigger.
Yeah, niggers, I hate you, like, niggers.
You know, they call you a nigger too in whatever fucked up way they can.
Ain't we lucky we got them? But you know what, though? I'm no longer going to go by nigger, okay? I got my senses this year. Started to fill it out, and they asked, when you black, they specify, like, what kind of black, you know, where you from. And I didn't see a space for blue check, not my ancestors trap brunch, but when I write it in, don't expect any problems, okay? So y'all already know which group I claim, all right? So when it's time for Hennessy and waffles, it's on your boy, all right? Hennessy, waffles, and Roddy Rich. That's what I'm into.
That's right. You said you filled out the census, so they asked that question. A lot of people can't answer that question.
I mean, you can just leave it as black.
Okay.
Like African-American. But they want to know specifically what country to send your black ass back to, so.
Apparently.
You know. But, anyway, let's get... let's wrap this up, guys. Get it to
like, what direction should we push your boat in?
Let's get the guess the race.
Now that it's time for some guess the race. That's right, it's guess the race time. Now that it's time for some guess the race. That's right, it's guess the race time.
That's right, it's time for guess the race. The number one game show going across all of podcast land. We read and play news articles from all over the globe. And we asked our contestants today, Karen, in chat room to the race. And of course, everyone playing is racist. All right. All right. Let's get into it, guys. See what Karen's going to do today. You know, she's cold and closed her heart off to so many people lately. It's like she's not even the same.
Let me see if my racism is going to be lit, though.
Baton Rouge teen and his mother arrested in shooting death at Plank Road gas station. His mother? A Baton Rouge teen and his mother were arrested in the, I mean, I'm sorry, it's Louisiana. A Baton Rouge teen and his mother were arrested in the shooting death of a man at a Plank Road gas station last week. Baton Rouge police say. wait, what's going on with this article? Okay. Officers arrived at the Kangaroo Express on Plank Road on March 19th in response to a reported shooting. According to the booking documents, the body of 21-year-old Reginald Jefferson was discovered inside the store, while another victim suffering from multiple gunshot wounds was located across the street. Detectives obtained video footage of the store, and they show 19-year-old Keon Jarvis into the store with his mother, 35-year-old Latoya Jarvis. 19 and 35. Sorry, the article just loaded more shit to get in my way. The footage shows Jefferson, the second victim, Keon Jarvis, and his mother beginning to fight. Jarvis shoots both victims, and when Jefferson falls face down, Jarvis then shoots him multiple times in the back, according to the booking documents. The second victim ran from the scene, and Jarvis chased him, shooting him in the back as he fled. Latoya Jarvis also chased after her son as he ran after the victims. Detectives later received a tip that Keon Jarvis was involved in the shooting and used video footage and DMV photos to determine the woman in the video footage was his mother, Latoya Jarvis. Keon Jarvis was booked in the East Baton Rouge Parish prison on first degree murder and attempted first degree murder. His mother, Latoya Jarvis, was booked on obstruction of justice. Karen, guess the race of Keon Jarvis and his mother, Latoya Jarvis.
Went out the front store, the grocery store, with all of her groceries.
All right, let's check the chat room, see what they believe. Black, y'all know it's black. Black on black crime. School to welfare to prison pipeline, black. Some niggas, black. Keon Latoya stating the obvious, black. Blackity, black, y'all. Mama was a true ride or die, black. Black, them blacks call his mama by her first name, black. Black like my soul. Baby boy stage play method acting class. His mama had the juice, black. Latoya Latoya showed up to the shooting in the house shoes, a scarf, and her robe, black. Blacks, his grandmother raised him and mom as siblings. Oh my god, you guys, we are worse than white people. Okay, the correct answer is black, though. Y'all got it right.
Yeah, I did the math. She was young when she had him.
Yeah, 35 and 19, so that would make her like 16. Mm-hmm. When she had old Keon. But you know what I always say, man, the family that dines together do crimes together. You know, it's actually kind of heartwarming and touching to see, you know, a family that can stuff like that. You know, I always wish that me and my mom could have a relationship like that. You know, we, you know, knock over gas stations and commit double homicides together, you know. Be close like that.
No.
Okay, wow. Well, I guess you don't have a heart, so you don't understand.
I guess I don't have a heart for that. No,
I'm trying to show his picture, but you guys know how my computer does.
Slowly.
Oh, it is slowly coming up. Okay.
Oh
yeah. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, she actually looked harder than him.
Don't she though?
Like he.
She got them school teacher bangs.
Like she looked like the mom from The Wire that was like telling her one son to be a drug dealer. Like
she looked like the usher on the usher board that was looking and tell you to spit the gum out your mouth for chewing it in church.
Like at first I thought she was chasing him just be like, no, don't do this, but now I feel like she was chasing him being like, yeah, that's how you do it, nigga. Okay, west side, ride or die.
She do. Yeah, she look harder than he does.
A man who attacked Rosa Parks accused of a similar crime in Grand Rapids. Man who attacked Rosa Parks accused of a similar crime in Grand Rapids.
How old is this man?
A man who robbed civil rights icon Rosa Parks in 1994 in a break-in at her Detroit home is accused of a similar crime in Grand Rapids. Joseph Nathaniel Skipper, 54, is accused of robbing a 74-year-old Grand Rapids woman in her home on New Year's Day. He was sentenced in 1995 to 8 to 15 years in prison for breaking into Rosa Parks' home, hitting her in the face, and robbing her of $53.
God damn.
Parks died in 2005, 10 years after that. Skipper is held in the Kent County Jail in multiple cases with bond totaling $65,000. He is charged with first, second, and third degree home invasion and two counts of breaking and entering a building. The 74-year-old Grand Rapids woman who lives at the city's northwest side called 911 at 2:10 a.m. January 1st to report, 12:10 a.m. to report that a man had just broken in and robbed her. 10 minutes into the new year. This is why 22 in the garbage right now, because people making decisions like this.
10 minutes.
He said, new year, same me, punch, give me your shit. She told police she was
nothing changed.
She was in bed when she heard someone forcing their way into her home. She confronted the man who assaulted her and demanded money. She told investigators she gave the man just under $50 before he left. The victim told police that the robber injured himself breaking a window to get into her home. Police found blood on the window. Damn. Police canvassed the neighborhood and used a police tracking dog, but could not find the robber. Crime scene technicians collected evidence, including the blood at the time of the break-in and the robbery. Detectives were investigating several other break-ins and began to tie those cases to the woman's robbery. Police said Skipper was questioned and admitted to some of the crimes, but he would not confess to the crime involving the 74-year-old. Earlier this month, results of DNA testing linked him to the crime. She thanked the police for kindness and professionalism. So Karen, guess the race of Joseph Nathaniel Skipper.
Black.
Karen's going with black. Okay.
He was at the back of the bus while Rosa was at the front.
Aha, hush that fuss.
Everybody move to the back of the bus.
Black, I remember that story. I think he is black. Black get thrown under the jail. Black old ass robber can't clear the broken glass. Hold on, this is moving too fast now. Okay. This was an evil ass nigga. Black actually look crackhead. Black, this is a nigga that needs to be beat like Toby. Crackhead nigga behavior. Keon's daddy black. Skipper is white. White day niggas. Dave Chappelle niggas. Hush that fuss. Everybody move to the back of the bus. Outcast black. I know skippers and they ain't shit black. A nigga that got his black car revoked. I'm fucked with 100. Nigga who needs his ass beat. He white now if he wasn't before. Lives in Detroit on purpose black. Skipper nigga. His mama is trash for having him black.
Aww.
Whites don't go to the black side of Detroit black. The correct answer is black. A couple of y'all went white, which I think is just like wishful thinking. Come on, that crime had nigger.
Ooh.
That crime had nigger written all over it.
Yes, it did. Look at that mustache.
Mm-hmm. Who the fuck does that to Rosa Parks? Man.
Right?
Dog. Like, you can't get no lower than that, man. It's just bad luck, I guess. Was he worried? Was that why he wouldn't confess to the next one? It was like, we also know you robbed a bunch of houses. Yeah, I did rob a bunch of houses, and we know that you assaulted a 74-year-old lady. Now hold up, player, I didn't do that. Okay,
now I might have robbed.
Okay, now I robbed several houses full of people. I did that. Okay, I assaulted all kinds of people, took all kinds of shit that wasn't mine. Okay, but what you won't catch me copy to is punching the old lady in the face. Okay. I absolutely did not do that.
I'm a gentleman.
Who was she this time? Is it Ella Fitzgerald?
Right. Who was she? Diana Ross? The woman?
Did I punch Sojourner Truth in the mouth by accident? Did the alleged victim was, you know what I'm saying? I didn't do it. But if I did it, who was? I don't want no extra time, okay? Y'all already got me for 15 years for hitting a civil rights icon.
Right.
Like, that was Betty Shabazz's house. Oh, fuck. I knew it. Can't help myself. God damn it, Skipper. Think.
I don't know what it is. My fist and these intelligent women, I don't know why. Their face is drawn to my fist.
I don't know why, but I picture him punching her like Sir Smoke-A-Lot punched them dudes in the half-baked where he gave them dap and then punched them in the face. Thank you so much for your service. Smack. Now I need $40 of crack money. Ha ha. All right, let's go to the bottom.
You helping the people, help me.
Right. you You sat in the back so I could smoke crack, okay? That's what I like to do. I sit in the back and smoke crack. So you ruined everything.
You fought the fight so that I could be free to rob you.
It was, that good drugs was in the back until you came and fucked everything up. All right, we gotta move on.
Thank you for the calls. I'm the calls.
Double the points and the race. Double the points and the race. That's right, double the points, double the race, and a bonus round of Guess the Race. So far, Karen is 2 out of 2.
Can you believe it?
I can believe it, all right? Because you got a hard heart, and you need to learn to let things go, Karen. You done cut a lot of people out of your life, all right?
Now that I have.
Mm-hmm. And it's wrong, Karen, all right? So open your heart back up, all right?
That I have, I have.
Let me cough on you with some of this coronavirus.
No, you keep that virus to yourself.
Couple caught having sex in police parking lot walked to jail. I mean, hey,
that's real love.
Just saying, that's a, it's a good.
Guess you have
open and shut case.
Sex and open together, you stay together.
I'm just saying, you don't.
I don't know what the rules are. Just
I'm just saying that way you don't have to worry about, you know, the police having to go through too much hassle. You know, they ain't have to travel far. They just go to the parking lot. Y'all can come with us. An Alabama couple was taken to jail Friday after authorities say they were caught having sex in a police department parking lot. Brookside Police Department Communications Center spotted the couple at 3:30 p.m. on the department's security cameras.
Oh, p.m.
The pair was in a vehicle parked just outside, so officers didn't have to go too far when they responded to the scene. Chief Mike Jones, who?
Mike Jones.
Said they identified the occupants of the vehicle as Paula Gardner and Jane Sanders, both of Center Point. As it turns out, Gardner was scheduled for court-ordered community service Friday, stemming from an earlier criminal case, and Sanders was her ride there.
Oh, okay. Apparently he didn't make it down time.
I mean, he gave her the ride there, and then she gave him a ride. You know, it's only fair.
Ah!
Ass gas or cash.
That's what they say.
When officers approached the vehicle, they noticed a strong odor of marijuana. The department's K-9 was deployed and positively alerted to the presence of illegal substances inside. Jones said authorities found crystal meth, marijuana, and drug paraphernalia, and a gun inside the vehicle.
And a partridge in a pear tree. I mean, they found everything else.
Ding! Garner and Sanders both were charged with indecent exposure, possession of a controlled substance, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Additionally, Sanders was charged with being in possession of a firearm. Man, he was just supposed to be the ride. The vehicle was impounded. Both suspects were walked to the city jail.
He got more than a ride.
Walk to the... We're going to impound your vehicle. Where can I pick it up? Oh, here. You're already in the impound spot, so don't...
Yeah, don't
it'll be here when you get out of prison. Now, if you just follow me, it's on your left. Yeah, the door on your left. Yep, you're in prison now. Yep, mm-hmm. There you go. The officers, Jones posted on Facebook, did a bang-up job on the case. Boom, boom. Care, guess the race of Paula Gardner and James Sanders. And just for the record, they are not the same race.
Paula Gardner and James Sanders. A white woman and a black man.
All right, let's check the chat room, see what they believe, okay? Tiger King husband, meth teeth, white. Definitely some Caucasian, is probably gone and end up on Pornhub white. She was white, needing that BBC before community service starts. Black.com, black man, white woman. I'm gonna go down to the jail and put black.com, black matter, lives matter, okay? Then we're gonna get them out. White woman, cause meth, black man, cause dick too bomb. Black man and white woman, black man. She didn't know we couldn't do that compound in the impound, white and black combo. So then she white and he crazy. I mean, black. White woman and a black man, white woman. Why do I feel like, black man, white woman, black baby. Black, remember that on Public Enemy? I don't know. Maybe it's just me. My dad used to play that album all the time. White man, black woman, black baby. White man, Mandingo warrior man, black, Coonin redneck, did the walk of shame to the hokey pokey, white woman, black man, white woman trying to get her next serve from her black dealer, white woman, black man. The correct answer is, and some of y'all guessed before I told y'all I was different races, but I'm gonna give it to everybody. Y'all got it. It's a black.com situation. This crime was brought to you by West Coast Productions. Okay. fat ass white girl 75.
Them pogs.
The series is still going. Okay. Mm-hmm. Man, that's wild. Like I said, at least they saved the city time and resources. He looks horrible, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he looks worse than her, you know?
He does.
Like, he, like, I guess he was on, was he on the meth, or was he selling the meth?
I don't know.
Man, I don't know.
Was this pre-coronavirus? Because he remember, didn't get a haircut.
Didn't we have a black.com situation like this in front of a hospital after the coronavirus stuff? They told
we did
two people not to touch.
She had a mask on or some shit like that, yes.
Psh, man, the game is wild. It's got... Is this like a new channel? Is this a TikTok thing or something that the kids are doing? Y'all tickety-talking?
I don't know.
Out here with this?
Somebody doing something.
New TikTok challenge. Interracial sex in front of it's going to government establishments. Let's go.
You said it looking for quarantine sex.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Let's wrap this up with some sword ratchetness. On his sisters, he's gonna put black.com black.
That's where I'm from.
A father and son nearly faced the wrath of a blade of a after a woman threatened him with a sword. The suspect, a 58-year-old Traverse City woman, was arrested Monday on suspicion of felonious assault, child neglect, and resisting arrest, according to a release from the Traverse City Police Department. The incident occurred around 5 p.m. when an argument broke out. The 56-year-old man asked her to leave due to her behavior and attitude. Instead, she grabbed a three-foot metal katana-type sword off the wall and removed its sheath before swinging it at him and his son, the release states. The man grabbed his son and left. Neither were injured. Officers took the woman to the Munson Medical Center for medical clearance due to intoxication, and she is at the Grand Traverse County Jail. That sounds like a fabulous name for a jail. The Grand Traverse could be the star of a Hulu series or something. All right, y'all, thank you so much for listening. You know, appreciate y'all coming through, hanging out with us live in the chat, trying to get through this whole coronavirus thing one day at a time. We appreciate it, and we're thankful for it. And you know, if a crazy woman wants to come up to you that you don't know, tell her she could be crazy from 6 feet away. Okay, stand up for yourself, guys. All right, we just want everyone to be safe.
Social
out there.
Distancing.
Social distance her ass from six feet away. Okay. All right, y'all. Until next time. I love you.
I love you too.
Mwah.